Kevin Mondro here, Coach Dro, D-R-O. Welcome back to the Tell Me Your Story Coach podcast, the podcast where we advocate coaches and help young coaches learn from the coaches telling these stories. Before today's inspiring coach, the goal of this podcast has been to tell 100 coaches' stories. Today is technically the 64th full interview. I had a trailer and two short episodes that do not count in my book. That being said, as I look at some of the past podcasts, it's pretty cool to see DJ Stevens, the new head coach at Western Michigan, Brian Smothers, the new head coach at Wayne State, Cornell Mann, the new head coach at Grand Valley, Carly Tebow, Dudonis, the new head coach at Fairfield, and Archie Miller, the new head coach at Rhode Island. By no means, this podcast is not at all why these coaches were able to create these great opportunities for themselves and their families. To me, it just continues to inspire me to get to that goal of 100 conversations and play a small part in helping young coaches grow and learn from these amazing coaches. Today, we are talking to Coach Dean Lockwood. Coach Lockwood is currently the associate head coach for Coach Susie Merchant at Michigan State University. Coach Dean just completed his third season with the Spartans. And Coach Lockwood just completed his 40th year in college coaching. A former men's head coach at Northwood University and Saginaw Valley State for 12 seasons, six at each, Coach Lockwood has coached on the women's side now for the past 18 seasons. And before coming to East Lansing, Coach Lockwood assisted Coach Pat Summitt at Tennessee. With the Lady Vols, Coach Dean was part of two national championships in 2007 and 2008, as well as three Final Four appearances. Coach Dean Lockwood has a deep love of the game and love for people. This is a wonderful conversation with a transformational coach who is a lifelong learner, and I can't wait for you to hear him tell his story. It does not matter if you coach the men or the women. Coach Lockwood is going to inspire you to coach at your highest level ever. Subscribe, rate, and review on whatever platform that you are currently listening. Remember, we are everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Please keep telling your coaching friends about this podcast. The bigger audience we can create, the bigger impact we can make with younger coaches. Follow Tell Me Your Story Coach on Instagram at Tell Me Your Story Coach. Follow Tell Me Your Story Coach on Twitter at Coach Kevin Dro. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Kevin Mondro. Enough of Coach Dro. Let's get to Coach Dean Lockwood and tell his story. Before we dive into Coach's story, if you are listening to this podcast, then you are serious about the coaching profession. And like me, always looking for ways to become a better coach and leader. I highly recommend that you go to Amazon today and order a copy of the book, Deep, The Life of Rob Murphy, Alive with Purpose. Coach Rob Murphy is the current Senior Director of Player Personnel for the Detroit Pistons, as well as the President and General Manager of the Motor City Crews. I had the wonderful opportunity to work for Coach Murph for 10 seasons. Why should you put Deep in your Amazon cart today? Deep, The Life of Rob Murphy. Deep chronicles Coach Murphy's remarkable journey from growing up in one of the toughest neighborhoods in Detroit, nearly being killed, to landing an assistant coaching position at Syracuse University under the great Jim Boeheim. Deep also gives incredible insight of a coach in the world of collegiate basketball, providing a behind-the-scenes view of both the Syracuse and Eastern Michigan University basketball programs. Throughout this book, Coach Murphy shares valuable life lessons that allowed him to defy the odds and become the basketball powerhouse that he is today. In telling his story with truth and confidence, Coach Murph provides a surge of inspiration to the rest of us. You can't control where you come from, but you can decide where you're going. Trust me, after you read chapter one, you won't put this book down, and you'll want to connect with Coach Murph ASAP. Deep, The Life of Rob Murphy, Alive with Purpose. Dean, why do you coach?
Well, Kevin, I would tell you this. There's probably a couple of reasons woven into it. Number one, it's a love of the game. This is in no particular order, but just always having a love of the game. I think the underlying drive and purpose is a love for people. So I think if you combine those things, a love for people, a love of the game, basketball has always been an incredible love of mine. Just the passion for playing it, watching it, teaching it, just being a part of it. I mean, I remember as a kid, just that magical sound of a ball on the hardwood or going through the net, the sound of sneakers on squeaking on a floor, you know, and a playground in our park, you'd hear the ball bounce and just, it was like a lure, you know, it's like the sirens in Greek mythology. You were just pulled to it. And then I think the other piece of just helping people and loving people, I think most of us who coach, Kevin, were positively impacted along the way by another coach, by a teacher. And I think for me, that has certainly been the case. I've had a number of people who have impacted me in such a positive way and have poured into my life and given me so much and helped me. And so I think when you receive that, part of what you find the real joy in life is giving that back to others. So that's been my underlying, if you say my purpose is, it's a love for people and it's a love for the game.
That love of the game, real quick, when do you remember just falling in love? How old?
I think I could tell you safely, I was probably 10, 11 years old. My dad and a neighbor, because my dad was a little like me. He wasn't real handyman or too mechanically inclined. And so he enlisted the help of a neighbor who was. We had a driveway in the house that I grew up in, Kevin, that was probably not much bigger than a Band-Aid strip. I mean, it was a strip. You could barely fit one car on that driveway. Well, he mounted a hoop up there. And that feeling of just shooting the ball in the basket, and being out, you could just pick up the ball at any time and go out there by yourself and literally get lost in a world of imaginary games and opponents and things like that and just working on your game. And then, you know, again, they've been so blessed to have unbelievably supportive parents. Occasionally when we would take a trip, my dad and mom would always try to find a motel that had an outdoor court. You know, you'd see those courts in the parking lot or something. So I think from a very early age, I just had a love for, that's all I wanted to do. It's just, I just want to lace up my Chuck Taylors and go out there and shoot baskets. And then as time went on, I really, the love grew deeper, you know, certainly in middle school and high school. And then in college is where I really kind of decided I want this to be a lifelong passion and I like to make a career out of it.
So you are currently the associate head coach for Coach Susie Merchant at Michigan State. Who is Coach Merchant?
Oh, she is a woman who also loves the game, loves to compete, very, very competitive. But I think her driving force is mentoring young women to be future leaders, to be women of character, to be people who are, you know, contribute positively in their respective communities and in any endeavor that they pursue. She wants women to be independent and self-sufficient and to have a voice and to embrace their strength. And she is all about mentoring young women along that path. Now, again, like most of us, or all of us who love this and love the process, basketball is the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So she is very, very competitive in this sport. Every single day that we walk out to practice, she's, you know, pursuing a championship and she's wanting her team to be pushing them and challenging them to be better. But she's somebody that, you know, as much as winning and as championships mean to her, it's so much more about mentoring these young women.
I love that. So the Spartans just had the 12th pick in the WNBA draft. How incredible was this for the program?
Anytime you can have a player drafted, because the WNBA is, Kevin, as you know, now it's hard to make. I mean, you got 12 teams with 12 roster spots. Some have even 11.
Yeah.
You're talking about, let's say, you know, roughly, let's do the 12. That's 144 of the best players, women basketball players in the world. And to be drafted, now again, you drafted, as we all know, it doesn't guarantee you're going to be on a team. So just to be drafted, to be considered to be, okay, you're in consideration for one of those roster spots. And then to make the team, absolutely a phenomenal achievement. So what that means to the program simply means that, you know, obviously we were able to help a young woman, in this case, Nia Cloud, achieve her dreams. We were help her to grow as a player, grow as a person, and to kind of qualify to be one of those special people who gets drafted into the highest women's basketball league in the world.
What was so special about Nia?
Oh, there were so many things special about her. I think, number one, she was a person of high character. I've been very fortunate to be around some really good players and coaches mm-hmm. over the years, and especially in women's basketball, I would tell you, Nia was the 27th player that I've ever been a part of on a coaching staff who's been drafted.
Wow.
So I've been really blessed. You know, Tennessee, we had 26 of them. And
wow.
While I've been here, this was our first one. And I will tell you, every one of those people virtually were people of incredibly strong character. They possessed a work ethic. They were honest. They were loyal. They were people who believed in being authentic and genuine in who they were. And one of the things that about Nia Cloud that was so impressive, she was the same person every single day. There was such a level of consistency to her emotionally, mentally, you know, with the effort that she brought, certainly physically, that would apply. She didn't allow herself to get, you know, overly exuberant too high, and she certainly didn't allow herself to get too low when things weren't good. She just had a very even keel, composed way about her, and she was so special for that. She was a great teammate. She cared about other people. I think her humility, it was never about Nia. I think Nia is a very proud person. She's very thankful for her achievements and for the people that have been a part of her journey and helping her. But it was never about Nia. You never heard, you know, I've heard this over the years sometimes, you know, it always kind of comes back to me. Nia was not about that. She is always quick to praise a teammate. She was always quick to recognize someone's efforts out there. And yet she was always, it wasn't a false humility. She was grateful and appreciative when people would give her praise, but she was also quick to deflect some of that to the people who helped her. So she was special in a lot of ways. We miss her already.
You mentioned Tennessee, and we're going to talk about your incredible run there. I have to ask right away, who was Coach Pat Summitt?
Oh, my goodness. An amazing coach and an even more amazing person and leader. You know, I'll make this comparison, this parallel with Susie. Mm. Basketball was Coach Summitt's vehicle. And make no mistake, she loved the game and loved to compete. I've not been around any, you can say there have been around as competitive people as Coach Summitt, but certainly no one more so. She was an incredible competitor, but the purpose that drove her was, once again, it was mentoring young women to become the best that they could be, the best versions of themselves. Pat was an incredible communicator, Kevin. She had an ability to connect. I think one of the things, you know, I've been asked this a number of times, as you might guess, over the years by people in various walks of life, not just in basketball circles, but what makes Pat great? What makes her special? And one of the things that I would tell you, she had an incredible ability to connect with you and kind of find out very quickly who you were and what drove you. And then she could connect to that at any given point in time. It was almost like a nerve that she identified, and she could go right to that nerve and touch it. And she was so good at communicating. She was very, very simple and very direct and very consistent. Her communication was very simple, very direct, and it was very clear and consistent. And so that was one of the things that was so special about her. Pat had a great sense of humor. I wish more people could appreciate how much fun she was. She loved to cut up and tell stories or hear stories. She loved to laugh. Great sense of humor. She loved, let me just tell you, and as many coaches do, but Pat had such a genuine and deep abiding love for her players and the people around her. And one of the things that I think just stands out most, you know, in fact, I was just in Knoxville not too long ago, and a person who worked closely with the program made this observation. He said, you know, I've been at practices where Pat would just, she could just carve somebody up a little bit and just get into them and just challenge them. And then practice is over and she's got her arm around him and she's, you know, inviting four or five of them over to dinner at the house, you know, and that was Pat. That was who Pat was. She was an incredible competitor and she wanted the best from you every single second. She demanded the best, but then she always would come back around to let you know how much she loved you, how much she cared. And it was authentic. It wasn't a fake thing. Pat got loyalty because she was so loyal. Mm. She was so loyal to her people. And in turn, she got that tenfold. You know, what she gave out, she got back in massive returns. And so she was special for a lot of reasons, as you can tell, I feel.
Time for a quick 30-second timeout. Getting this podcast to you is all because of my friends at Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all the major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and so many more. You also get a great-looking podcast website. They provide audio players that you can drop into other websites. They give detailed analytics to see how people are listening. To start your own podcast, follow the link in my show notes. Let Buzzsprout know that I sent you. You'll get a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan. And this also helps support my show. Buzzsprout, the easiest way to start a podcast.
Yeah, for sure. 1 year, just started out in coaching. I was at the Don Meyer Coaching Academy. I heard her speak at Lipscomb. Coach Meyer had the academy. And it must have been 110 degrees in the gym. It was in late, maybe early June, maybe June 4th, 5th. You know, we're approaching June.
It gets pretty hot in Nashville down that time of year. Yes, sir.
And she wore coaches out with ball screen defense. Like, it was methodical. I think she might have talked about 7 or 8 different ways to defend a pick and roll. But her attention to detail with teaching was absolutely spectacular. And winning the 2 national championships with her, as you reflect about that, like, you just sometimes think about it at night, like how special that was.
Oh, I do. And as more time passes, you know, I think it, when you're younger, and I was 47 and 48 during those 2 national championships, so I wasn't young, but I was still younger than I am now. You know, to me, 47 or 48 at this stage is very young. But, you know, you're thankful and appreciative. Don't get me wrong. You're filled with so much gratitude. You know, part of you thinks that, you know what, there could be more. There's, you know, we could do this again. And certainly that's true. But as you get older and you go further down the path, you realize that, you know what, how special and how rare those moments are. There are so many great coaches for whom I have the utmost respect that have never coached in the Final Four. They've never won a national championship. It's amazing to me that this profession is like that. And but that's just the simple truth of it. There are some great coaches, some coaches that, you know, as you know, Kevin, some of the best coaches out there are people that nobody knows. They're coaching in obscure places or at different levels, and they can coach their butts off.
Right.
But they're just not in a situation that is going to bring them a national championship. And so to do that, to go to your question, I do reflect sometimes and just, I think how special it was, how blessed I was to be a part of it, how thankful I am to have still those relationships with so many of those people that we shared that. That's something that we'll go to our graves with, is that we shared that moment at one moment in time that we were the best in the country at our level, and we did it together, and knowing that everybody played their part. Very, very special. So yes, there'll be times I'm driving or walking. Sometimes I might be in the middle of a workout and I'll just reflect on something and I'll just be very, very thankful. I consider myself very blessed having had those experiences.
So your coaching journey is really, really cool. I met you when you were the head men's basketball coach at Saginaw Valley. You were the head coach there for 6 seasons. Before that, you were the head coach at Northwood for 6 years.
Yep.
Then you go to Tennessee, you work with the men. How did you transition from the men to the women?
Well, it was during that time that I met Coach Summit. And in terms of the sequence, Kevin, the chronology of my career, it was, you start out as a GA at Central Michigan and 3 years as an, this is all on the men's side, 3 years as an assistant at West Point.
Yep.
And then to Tennessee for 5 years as a men's assistant. Then I went from there to Northwood. So during my 5 years at Tennessee, number one, I worked for a coach named Don DeVoe initially. And Don had played for, he and Coach Knight were on the same staff at West Point at one time. They had played for Fred Taylor, who at Ohio State, who was a very strong, big defensive guy. And so Don did a lot of defensive breakdown drills. And Don was big on defense and rebounding. Well, if you know anything about Coach Summit, her philosophy, so much of her success was with the foundation of defense and rebounding. Mm-hmm. So Pat was watching practices a lot, and she would come through. Sometimes she would watch a whole practice. Sometimes she just watched, you know, 20, 30 minutes of it or a couple of drills of it, whatever, you know, time would allow. But see, there was a connection, and Pat was this way. And when I was on her staff, she was always reaching out, Kevin, to get new ideas, get new thoughts. She would ask questions. She'd see something. She'd say, hey, why do you do that drill? What? Tell me about that. What do you get from that? And so she was doing that, you know, with our staff when I was on the men's staff at that time. In fact, I remember her one time I had gotten the tape, Dick Bennett blocker mover tape, which you're familiar with. It's, you know, Dick Bennett's offense at when he was still at Stevens Point. She picked that tape. She said, what is blocker mover? And I was telling her a little bit about it. She said, hey, can I borrow this? And so Pat took it and digested it, you know, and that was just Pat. So we had a friendship based on that. And I was also, you know, at that point I was in my 20s and I was doing a lot of the workouts with the guys. So I would be in there at different times of day, not just during working hours, but in the evening sometimes, and be working guys out, and she would see me. And so we just struck up a friendship as the years passed. So now I go to Northwood and 1 year at Central as an assistant again, and then 6 years at Saginaw Valley. We stayed in touch, and it wasn't all the time. We would maybe a couple times a year, once or twice a year, just be in touch. Back then, everybody either wrote notes or it was a phone call, you know? Right. You know, we stayed in touch. And then when she happened to have an opening after my sixth season at Saginaw Valley, and she reached out. She had told me at that time, she said, I always want a male on my staff after finally doing it, because at one point she didn't. She said, it was important to me. And she said, I thought about reaching out to you before, but I thought you were very entrenched in the men's game. And at this stage, you know, you're in your mid-40s. I thought, you know what, now might be the time. So that was kind of the connection that kind of segued me to Tennessee in the women's side.
So this past season, I had the opportunity to work for Coach Fred Castro with Eastern Michigan in their women's program, coming from 10 years with the men. But we were talking off air before we recorded how it was an incredible experience for me, almost spiritual in just terms of coaching. What has it been like for you to go from the men to the women?
Oh, gosh. There are certain things, and I'll never forget some of my initial conversations with Coach Summit about this, because she told me, Dean, there are going to be some things that are just going to be exactly the same. They're players and coaches, mm-hmm. and don't think of them any differently.
Right.
But then there's some things that are going to be very different, and you're going to have to learn some of those subtleties and some of those differences. I remember a couple of things she told me. She said, number one, I think you're going to enjoy this more than you even think you will, because she goes, women, if they trust you, if they believe that you can help make them better, and I think this is true of a lot of players, mm-hmm. but I think this is particularly true of young women coaching college women that I've experienced. She said they'll do anything. They'll just buy in and they'll be extremely coachable. You're going to find them to be very teachable, very receptive, very coachable. Whereas in guys, you certainly have that. But I think at times, as you know, coaching men, there are times when you have to continue to prove yourself. Or, you know, guys, we think at that age, we think we know a little bit more than what we do. You know, mm-hmm. when we start to get in our early 20s, we kind of think we figured a few things out. We got the world figured out. And, you know, this old coach doesn't know too much. And so I'm going to do it this way. Whereas I think women are much more receptive, especially if there's that relationship and that connection there. So I remember her telling me that, Kevin, and it was so true. And again, there were certain things. You coach athletes, especially some of them that were, you know, had such high aspirations. They wanted to play in the WNBA. They wanted to play professionally overseas. They wanted to make the Olympic team. They wanted to just really take it as far as it could go. They were so receptive and they worked so hard. I mean, the work ethic in some of these young women was just amazing to me, and I just loved it. And yet there's also, in that sense, there's a similarity, whether you're men or coaching men or coaching women, but yet also there's also some differences. And one of the best phrases I've ever heard, I wish I had invented this. This has been said before, and I wish we knew who the originator of it was, but I found this to be very true. I think men have to play well in order to feel good. Women have to feel good in order to play well. Mm. And I think that was really driven home to me, because so much of what I discovered is how important the social piece was to women, their connection and relationship to one another, to just their feeling of, you know, the overall program, and they felt good about being there. And when that's in place, man, it's powerful. But if there was something in the relationships that weren't good, or there was something from a chemistry standpoint was a little off, then things could go awry really quickly. So again, it's been a learning and growth process along the way, but it's certainly been a like you said, you called it spiritual. And it's been a wonderful journey of learning and discovery and growth. Continue. I kid people. I said, you know, when I got into the women's game 18 years ago, I knew 0.0 on a scale of 1 to 10, I knew 0.002 about women. Now, after 18 years, I'm at a 1.7. So I'm getting there, but there's still a lot more to learn.
Hey, coach, I need one more 30-second timeout, and I need to tell you about my affiliate partner that I've been supporting since episode one. That friend, Desmond Ferguson, the owner of Moneyball Sportswear. Check out MoneyballSportswear.com. Let me tell you about the gear that Moneyball produces. Men's, women's, boys, and girls' sports attire.
get all your spring. That's right, I said it. Spring gear ASAP. Truly, what are you waiting for? And if you are high school, and especially an AAU coach, getting into the AAU season this spring and summer, and you need a new set of uniforms, please reach out to Moneyball. The uniforms that Desmond and his team create are simply spectacular. Go to MoneyballSportswear.com. Shop away. Enter the promo code DRO, D-R-O, in the coupon checkout. Grow with us, Moneyball, the only way to ball.
One of the things I tried to focus on this year was the power of my words.
Yeah.
Tried to be really positive, empower the young ladies. I'm trying to do the same thing with my 6.5-year-old, trying to use words that empower him to get him to believe in himself. But one of the things that I didn't know about you too recently is that you don't cuss or swear. Do you constantly think about the words that you use when you coach?
Well, I do. And now let me pause for a minute and say, I would amend that statement to say never, because there are players, if they were listening to this right now, to whom I've coached, that would absolutely, they would object strenuously. If you've ever seen a few good men, well, I object. No. I object strenuously. I strenuously object. They've heard a word or two that probably you wouldn't say in mixed company come out of my mouth, but I really strive, Kevin, to not, you know, again, this is just, everybody has their way. Everybody has, and there are moments where I think, you know, there are certain moments that you can use a word for emphasis or delivery where it really has an impact. But I think if that's a constant, if you have to resort to that constantly, for me, strictly personal, I'm certainly not laying a law of any kind or saying that this is a principle that everyone should, but I just don't feel it's very effective. I think I can find other ways to communicate and get a message across, and certainly not all swearing is demeaning. I think people can use it as a very colorful, you know, language and things like that. But I would tell you this, I've always believed you can be demanding without being demeaning. And I think sometimes I certainly in the women's game that I've been in the last 18 years, I think you have to be very careful about your words, because even when it's not meant, it's not so much what we say, right? It's what people hear.
Right.
You know, my intent is one thing, but what is heard is another. And so I think I've always been very cautious to try to not, even if it's not intended, it's not my intent, I don't want it to come across as anything personal, anything that's demeaning, but I do want to be very demanding and to let a player know that, you know, always there's unconditional love for you, but at the same time, I'm not going to accept anything but your best. I want your best, and I want nothing but your best at all times. And so there are times when I've had to, you know, maybe try to use a word that was not in my ordinary vocabulary to bring that out, but I certainly don't ever. Ever. I don't know. I don't ever recall, and I hope I never do. I don't want to make it personal. I don't want to make it sound, it's not a personal attack. It might be my own anger, emotion, a kind of a planned temporary insanity moment. But by and large, I do think you can communicate effectively. You can get messages across. You can reach people. You can inspire people without profanity.
You know, when Fred hired me this off season, he really wanted me to come and work with the post players at Eastern. And I thought I knew it all. And then it took me a while. And it's really a vulnerable moment for me. It took me a while to adjust and try to figure out the women post play, like teaching post play for women basketball players. And I know you work with the post and you work with all types of players throughout your career. But what are some simple things you try to emphasize at Michigan State with your post players?
Oh my gosh, great question. And it is. There are certain subtleties that are different in the men's and women's game. And yet again, there are certain fundamentals that I think apply. But I think, you know, the ability, using their footwork and their feet, so important, as you know, Kevin. I mean, that's such a fundamental piece of so many aspects of basketball. But post play, I think, is very important. You know, the ability to seal and hold a seal is really, really important. You know, again, with women players, getting them accustomed to that physicality and that contact. Now, there are a lot of players out there that love that. I'm going to tell you, our Big Ten League is unfortunately full of them that, you know, are very good at sealing and contact. And so that's a big part of it, is understanding the physicality of post play. And now how the game is called, you know, it's called a little differently. So you do have to, you kind of be aware now of, and adjust of how the game is called. But I think the footwork piece, and then the other part, Kevin, is finishing.
Right.
Being able to finish around the basket 100%. With either hand is a huge piece. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, in women's basketball, because not as many are dunkers and play around the rim, finishing is so important. Again, it's another Coach Summit axiom, but she used to say on offense, if you can make layups and free throws in women's basketball, you're going to be in games. You'll be in games if you can make your layups and make free throws. So, you know, footwork and finishing are probably two of the bigger areas that we spend a lot of time with.
You know, it took me about 5 months to just figure out, like, boy, I need to get in here and do the miking with the young ladies. And it's finishing with both hands. And I just, like, just was more like just what we talked about earlier. Like, I thought I knew it all. And then I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah.
And the one thing I really, really appreciated about the women is their work ethic was so off the chart. So if you show them something and they're going to master it. So, you know, I agree. Finishing. And I think it was a real good life lesson for me. Basketball lesson, no matter if I coach men next year or women, premium should be on finishing around the rim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those are going to win you a lot of games. And when you miss layup, I mean, how many times have you sat in a staff meeting or watched film either by yourself or with your staff or with a team and just said, okay, take a look at the gentlemen, ladies, whoever you coach. Take a look at the number of layups. You know, how many, I mean, I can remember a couple of games here in the last couple of years that we would say, you know, we did so many things well. You know, we defended, we rebounded, we got to the free throw line, but we missed 9 layups, you know, and it's like you're leaving money on the table. You're literally leaving points on the table when you miss layups. And so that can be a killer in men's or women's basketball. When you miss layups, close in shots, you work for them. There's such a high percentage shot, and when you're not able to finish, that can be a dagger.
You know, I thought it was really cool this season to watch you as the acting head coach when Coach Merchant was out. You won a big game, watching your team and the players go crazy for you afterwards in the locker room. Or to me personally, just a great moment. But I remember traveling. We mentioned Don Meyer, and I remember traveling down to the Don Meyer Coaching Academy and watching.
Oh yeah.
And watching you and Coach Jay Smith in the front row, and I've never seen two human beings take more detailed notes than both of you. You know, as you think about your entire coaching career, like how have you sort of evolved as a coach?
Man, that's a great question. And, you know, so much of this journey, Kevin, and you know this is something you already know. I mean, it's the ability to be a lifelong learner and to continue to evolve and to continue to grow is so critical to our success. I mean, we have to continue to learn and grow. And again, using Coach Meyer, the great Coach Meyer, you know, what was one of his axioms that he said at almost virtually every academy or clinic or camp that he ever did, and it was the part that he would deal in philosophy, and he would say, you can't use all the great ideas, but you can get all the great ideas. So get all the great ideas and then adapt to what fits you, and then the other ones put to the side. And so part of that process is learning and growing. So, you know, to go to your question now, is I've always felt this, that the game is overcoached and undertaught. The great Pete Newell, when I observed his big man camps, would say that to players usually on the first day. The game is overcoached and undertaught. And I think sometimes as young coaches, we have just such an affinity to learn a new system, which is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's not a criticism at all. But sometimes we get so top heavy and absorbed with, hey, let's learn this new offense, let's learn this new play, let's learn this. And we don't know how to teach the nuances of what's happening within those plays or within those offenses. So, again, to go to your question, I think I've really tried to simplify. You know, again, the great Coach Meyer, one of his last presentations that he kind of did on tape, you can find this if you Google it, but he said, if I had a team today, I think I'd try to be simple, sound, and solid. Simple, sound, and solid. So I think what I've found over the years is that sometimes less can be more. That when you do something, you do it very, very well. And that doesn't mean, you know, you're not going to have plays in your playbook and you're not going to add as things go. But I think you have to be careful. I think there's a tipping point. There's a good balance point where you can overindulge that and you can inundate players with too much as opposed to teaching people how to play and teaching them concepts and giving them some freedom with structure, with responsibility to play. And so that's something I've tried to, as time has gone on, I'm still on a journey and a search for that balance point. You know, how much do you want to structure and control versus how much do you want to have some guidelines and structure, but also give players the freedom to make plays. And I think that's a real important piece for any coach to decide. And I think the other thing too, I was talking to somebody actually this morning about this. You know, if you looked at my practice plans when I was a head coach at Northwood or Saginaw Valley, they were filled with drills. And again, let me be clear. Drills are great, and they're great, especially at habit forming and emphasizing certain aspects or areas of the game that need work. But I think I would teach more from using 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5 even concept.
Yeah.
And maybe shorten the drills, shorten each, practice, the number of drills, but even shorten the time in a drill and then teach from the game itself. I think that's one of the areas I could tell you that I've definitely evolved and would change if I were to become a head coach tomorrow.
So I'm in this short transition now, and I'm helping the Ann Arbor Sports Commission put together a high school basketball tournament or showcase at Eastern Michigan, potentially for the winter. And so I'm talking to all these high school coaches now, and this has been another source of like vulnerable moment for me. And I'm reaching out to these coaches, and I almost feel like a disconnect at first. And part of it is just finally I put my head on my pillow last night, and I was like, bam, I did such a lousy job staying in touch with local high school coaches. And that's just my own recruiting mistake. And I've been pretty honest about some of the mistakes I've made in recruiting. How have you developed your own recruiting philosophy?
Oh, man. I'll tell you this. First of all, let me just say this. If it puts your mind at ease just even a little. We've all made, the longer we coach, and if we're honest with ourselves, we've all made so many mistakes. And that's where the real learning occurs. The value of a mistake. Obviously nobody likes mistakes and nobody likes to, keep thinking about them and bring them back and say, oh man, I missed on this kid, or this was, I thought this kid couldn't play and they could, or whatever the case. I thought this kid would be better and they're not. We've all made those mistakes, and the key is not that we make them. It's a lot like life, right? You're going to have failures. The key is not that you have them. It's how you respond to them and what you learn and grow, the growth and the learning that result from those mistakes. So I would tell you that happens so much. And I can tell you I've learned so much from the mistakes that I've made. Recruiting philosophy piece, I've been, again, very blessed, very fortunate, and I'm so thankful for this, that I've been from my earliest entry into the coaching profession, which was right out of college. I was very fortunate to go to Central Michigan University as kind of a GA/volunteer coach right out of college. I've been around such incredible people, such amazing mentors and people who've been able to teach me. At Central, under Dick Parfit, we had Ralph Pym and Dave Ginsburg, who were both very different personalities and people, but both tremendous recruiters. I mean, tremendous recruiters. Their ability to connect and to form relationships and to really to deliver a message and to deliver it with passion, but also sincerity. At West Point, there was a coach named Les Furtick, who went on to coach at Ohio State, and then he ended up his career at Texas Tech with Coach Knight. And Les was a very organized, very detailed coach who was, an outstanding recruiter. And so one of the things as I observed all these people, Coach Summer, phenomenal recruiter. In watching all these different people, and as different as they were in style and personality and methodology, I would tell you the one thing that resonated with me is authenticity. You have to be who you are. You have to be genuine. If you're trying to sell somebody, I've always approached recruiting and not as selling. I kind of, it almost bristles when I hear that, and I know they don't mean it in a negative sense, but just the word, when you hear selling, I don't like that, because to me, recruiting should be about a fit and a win-win. So again, part of selling per se, or presenting your product, your program, you got to really put forth what you have and some of the advantages that you feel you have over a different school. But at the end of the day, if you have to continually headlock people to come to your school, and especially in this day and age now with the transfer portal, I just don't know how good a fit that's going to be all the time. I think there has to be a dimension of win-win. Some of the best salespeople I've ever been around outside of coaching, they're people, they don't immediately, when somebody walks in the door, they're not trying to hammer them and sell them. You know what they do is they ask questions. They find out what's important to the person. What do they value? What are they looking for? And they'll be honest with them. They'll say, hey, look, if you're looking for this, this is not our product. This is not the place. Because they're authentic, because they're genuine and they're sincere. And again, you're building a rapport and a relationship, right? Once you build that rapport, it opens doors to further conversation. It deepens trust. And that's when you can really get into some things about, hey, this is how you fit here. And this is how we see you. And, this is a vision. And you can kind of do that, there's a little bit more receptivity to that once you build rapport and trust. So for me, it's always been about being authentic and building a rapport and a trust with someone and then saying, okay, this is who we are and what we are, versus coming in and doing a dance and, you know, like a one-man band and saying, hey, look, it's what we, you know, yeah. That to me has never been my style.
So your former assistant, Michael Peck, he sent me 4 wild card questions. I'm going to pick one just because time is money. I'm going to pick one. I'm going to text you the other 3 off the air. But
I'd love to see him. He knows me well.
Okay, so why has your Outback order not changed in over 25 years?
Well, I will tell you this. Coach Peck and I have been, we stay in very close contact, but we've been away from each other for some time. So he would be absolutely stunned to find out that it has changed slightly. It used to be the grilled chicken on the Barbie, right, with steamed broccoli, mm-hmm, and a house salad with no onions or tomatoes and the little mustard vinaigrette on the side. I have now changed. I've transitioned, Kevin, in my old age to grilled salmon. Mm. I have the grilled salmon, which is just the name on the menu of it.
Right.
But that is my go-to now. So Coach Peck would be stunned to hear my answer.
So I always end the podcast. What are some simple tips for young coaches?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm going to start with something I just said a moment ago. Is be yourself. You can gather so much information and learn from so many people. You can emulate some things that they're doing in certain ways, but you have to be yourself. You have to be authentic and be genuine. I think second thing, know why you coach. Mm. Know your purpose. Know your overriding purpose of what you do. If all you're trying to do is win games, and that's all the impact that you have as a coach, I think you're really falling short of the opportunity and the privilege that you have as a coach. So I think that's really, really important. I think, you know, in this day and age, it's getting harder and harder to do this, but I think it's still so important. Be a transformational coach and not just a transactional coach. Be somebody that impacts lives and makes a difference, not just, you know, looking for the short victory, again, just the win and the next job and the next opportunity. I think be somebody that really coaches and teaches well, but really know that you can impact lives through this. I think, you know, Don Meyer, again, to point to him, he gave us so much wisdom over the years. Make the big time where you are. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it says on your shirt, what it says on, you know, your stationery. Make that job the best job you can possibly be. Make that the big time. And your players will respond to that. The people around you will respond to that. And I think that, again, it's an important piece about going in. And there are so many things, but, you know, be a teacher. Be somebody who really works at the craft of teaching, learning how to teach well. And that is a lifelong, ongoing process. I've been in this now. I've finished my 40th year of college coaching. Mm. I'm still learning how to teach better. And so you never stop. And that would be my last thing, is never stop learning, never stop growing. Coach Summit used to tell us this: you never arrive in this game. I don't care how long or how long you coach, how much success you've had, you never arrive. You're always in a state of growth and evolution, and will be until the minute you step out of this. So those are the few nuggets that I would pass along to young coaches.
This always happens. I've done almost 65 of these. I ask coach for 30 minutes. We end up going almost 50. And it's just a true credit to you. And I really want to thank you for your time today, coach.
Thank you.
I've admired you greatly throughout your entire career. You've impacted so many players on and off the court, and you've impacted, and you might not know this, but you've impacted so many coaches like myself throughout your entire career. I just think you're a sensational coach and an amazing person. And I know that the Spartans and Coach Merchant and the ladies with the program are so fortunate to have you in their life. So I just want to thank you today for your time, and truly thank you for helping young coaches.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate your kind words. If there's an ounce of truth to what you've said, then I'm very honored. I'm very humbled. I hope I've helped others. There's no greater joy than to be able to know that you've helped people along the way. And it's been a real privilege and an honor to be on your podcast. And certainly it's been great to reconnect with you as well. I've always admired and respected you and how you go about what you do. So appreciate the opportunity to be here and share time.
Go green.
Go white.
Thanks, Coach.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
That was a great conversation with Coach Dean Lockwood. Here are some things that I love that Coach Dean said on why does he coach: the love of the game and love for people. And to me, these two loves
resonated throughout this entire conversation. And who is Coach Susie Merchant about mentoring young women? Basketball is the vehicle that she uses to accomplish this. On the WNBA draft, 144 roster spots in the WNBA. Nia was a person of high character, 27th player in Coach Dean Lockwood's career that has been drafted. On who was Coach Pat Summitt? Coach Summitt loved to compete. Her purpose was to help young women become the best version of themselves. She was an amazing communicator. She had the ability to connect with you. She was simple, direct, and very clear and consistent. She was so loyal to her people, and she got that loyalty back tenfold. On making the transition from coaching men to women. Women, if they trust you, they will be extremely coachable and receptive. Men have to play well to feel good. Women have to feel good to play well. 18 years coaching women now for Coach Dean Lockwood. Pretty incredible to hear his journey from a Division II head men's coach to a Power 5 women's assistant coach. On the power of words in coaching, you can be demanding without being demeaning. Not what you say, what people hear. Coach Lockwood wants your best all the time. He does not want to make it a personal attack. He believes you can communicate effectively without profanity. On post play, using footwork is so important. Sealing and holding a seal. Being able to finish around the basket with either hand. Footwork and finishing. Missing layups is like leaving money on the table. On how Coach Lockwood has evolved as a coach. The ability to be a lifelong learner. Learn and grow. Get all the great ideas. The game is overcoached and undertaught. Pete Newell. Don Meyer. Simple sounded solid. Less is more. Drills are great for habit forming. Teach from the game itself. On his recruiting philosophy. The value of a mistake. How do you respond to them? So good, Coach Dean. You have to be who you are. Being authentic. Recruiting should be about a fit. And his tips for younger coaches. Be yourself. Know why you coach. Know your purpose. Be a transformational coach. Impact lives through coaching. Make the big time where you are. Be a teacher. Never stop learning. And never stop growing. Thank you, Coach Dean Lockwood, for sharing your story. Subscribe, rate, and review on whatever platform that you are currently listening. And we are everywhere. Follow Tell Me Your Story Coach on Instagram. At Tell Me Your Story Coach. Follow Tell Me Your Story Coach on Twitter. At Coach Kevin Drow. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Kevin Mondrow. Stay safe. I can't say this enough. Be you. Keep coaching. And see you on the next episode of the Tell Me Your Story Coach podcast.